Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. It's actually the last one of the year, sadly. It's been a good year. We've done a lot of these podcasts, but yes, if we were to record the next one, we'd be doing it over Christmas, which obviously we're not going to do. We're not that dedicated. Okay, so with me this week, we have Harvard. Hello, Harvard.
Good morning. Have a merry early Christmas and a happy early New Year.
And we also got with us Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hey, for those not celebrating Christmas, I hope you still get a crap ton of presents from your friends who are.
Yes, so let's get straight into the last one of the year. We've got some Christmassy themed Vocaloid music today to kick things off and get us all in a good mood. This is Miko's Stay With Me. And welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that bit of music. Hope it put you in the festive mood. All right, so up first for our podcast this week, we're going to have a quick chat about the DDNet Awards, because by the time you're listening to this, we would have announced them all. It's been a long process. We had 16 categories of awards this year. We've announced one per day. If you go and check it out on the website, you'll be able to see them all. And I guess the thing that the awards kind of affirmed is that It was a great year for games all around, but Nier Automata was obviously streaks ahead as the best game as far as we were concerned. I think it won 6 categories of the 16, got a silver in one other. So, yeah, it was by far and away the lead game for the year. But there were plenty of other games that got lots of nods. Hellblade, we had get quite a few awards. And Persona 5 was obviously up there in the mix for an awful lot of categories. So, yeah, I mean, how many of those games have you guys, like, played a lot? Because to explain to the listeners, our voting process is to have the entire DDNet team vote on each category. But obviously, we haven't all played all the games. So it's just the fact we've got a large team that lets us arrive at the various award winners. For instance, I haven't played Golf Story yet, which was the Australia and New Zealand winner.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, most of us have played most of the games. What were some of your highlights from that list of award winners, Ginny?
Well, for me, it was definitely Nier. I think Nier and Persona, they were the popular winners, I guess, here at DDNet, which only proves that DDNet is a great place to be. But it's just, Nier was a game that I just couldn't stop talking about. Even now, to my mates who haven't played it yet, I'm still harping on about how you've got to play, you know, it's not as long as it seems, like, don't let the length put you off, like, I'm still trying to sell people on the game. So, yeah, I mean, I just, Nier was more of an experience than a game. Not to say that other games can't obviously be also meaningful experiences, and obviously everyone defines meaningful very differently. But I don't think any game I played this year captured me as much as Nier did. Like, I am someone who is emotionally stunted. And Nier had a lot of points in it that sort of just drew sort of emotions out of me that I didn't know existed. So no, it was honestly, I can't recommend the game enough, and I was so pleased that it won all the categories that it did, because to me it deserved them. Another one that I really enjoyed that I think was a bit underrated by a couple of other people was Yonder, the Cloudcatcher Chronicles. So I am all about this new wave of games that completely do away with using violence as any sort of mechanical tool, and I thought Yonder, apart from being Australian and homegrown, which I 100% support, it was just such a great space to be in. Like, Yonder was just the ultimate antithesis to all the AAA games that were about stabbing and shooting and everything that came, I think came out kind of around the time that Prey might have come out, or at least was kind of on that same buzz at the same time. And it was just the complete antithesis to games that are about death and killing. And it was just amazing that they had that product and that people liked it commercially. It did quite well commercially, I think. And also, as Matt said, underrated for me was Golf Story. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was incredibly, slightly cringeworthy, but incredibly Australian. Seems to be the common thread of the games that I think are underrated, is that they were just completely chock full of Australian humour. But overall, I think it's been a great year. For games in general, I think Nier has showed us, I guess, the pinnacle of what narrative storytelling can be like, and that the game doesn't have to come from UB or EA or any publisher. It doesn't have to be hyper realistic. It doesn't have to be completely focused on critical violence. That would be great. And then you've got games like Golf Story, which is the other end, and they're sort of on the lower budget end, they're indie games, and that they can still tell a great story and still capture audiences. And I don't know, I think it was a great year. I loved it. And I think every game that made it onto our list deserved to be there. And it was a tight fight for quite a few of the categories. But my favorite would have to be Nier, Golf Story, and Yonder, the Cloudcatcher Chronicles.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those years where there were an awful lot of games that could have won, unfortunately, for most of the other games. It just happened to be a year where Nier also came out. And if that game wasn't there, the mix of winners would have been far deeper. There were an awful lot of games and some categories that we had a lot of trouble just narrowing it down to a top 10, let alone a top 3. So it was, yeah, it was. It's hard to look at that list of winners and say that 2017 isn't one of the best, if not the best year for games that we've ever had. And yeah, I mean, for example, Zelda and any other year would have just kind of whitewashed just about every category. But yeah, it was hard to actually give it wins in a lot of cases because there was, you know, Nier and there were other great games as well that just got the edge over Zelda as well. So yeah, it was a big year. The other interesting thing this year was it was the first time since we've actually run these awards that the Blockbuster of the Year category actually went to Japanese developers, all three of them. Every other year, the Blockbuster Game of the Year has been mostly Western developed titles because the West tends to do the Blockbuster thing better. They generally have more money to throw around at games, and the results generally mean that the Japanese publishers and developers are playing in a smaller space and don't really qualify for Blockbuster. But this year, you know, Nier, Zelda and Mario Odyssey were all legitimate Blockbuster games and obviously Japanese developed. So it's good to see that the Japanese development industry had a really good year across, you know, the niche kind of indie stuff right through to the big budget stuff that sells millions and millions of copies. And in the case of Zelda and Mario Odyssey really sells the Switch, 10 million units already for the Nintendo Switch, which was, it's just amazing. It's almost eclipsed the Wii U over its entire lifetime already. That's how much of a runaway success this thing has been proving to be for Nintendo. So that was good to see as well. Harvard, have you got any thoughts on the awards and, you know, anything really kind of stand out for you?
Yeah, this year voting was so difficult. It was absolutely a choice between, like, children, pretty much. It's because I knew in my mind that Nier was going to win a lot of them because it's been so really emotionally resonant with everyone, and should probably confess now I've not actually played Nier. I've read a lot about it. I can understand why it would be great, but I am the opposite of Ginny. I am the most emotional player.
No,
I got emotional playing Cat Quest last night. That's the extent to which I get affected by things. So I've had a very busy year. I didn't think that I wanted a game like Nier to come into my life and then shake everything to pieces. So I noticed that Sheffy took second in mobile, and that was an interesting game that...
Which
really
you didn't like.
I've kind of come around on it. I think I like the idea to it. I don't know. Everyone should try it, and they should make their own opinions. And I think that's the best thing about Outside, is that we can put our opinions out there, but we encourage our readers to make their own. And so if you don't think that Nier is the best game in the world, like, that's also an opinion that's valid to have, I guess. I also like... Art House. I think that that's a game which might have been overlooked a little bit, but it's doing something that games don't normally do, which is portray a viewpoint, or in this case, like, really a belief system, and then create mechanics to help the audience empathize with that. I think that's really an approach that's missing from a lot of game development. Normally, it's just, we have this story that we want to tell, or we have this core mechanic that we want to get out, and we'll build around it, but very rarely is it like, we have this idea that we want to make a story for and we want to make a game for. And I think that's, you really feel that when you're playing it. So I think that's a good nod that we had in our awards.
Yeah. I haven't actually played everything yet. It's on the to-do list, especially after it got the award from everybody else. So I do need to check that one out. I haven't had a chance to yet. But yeah, hopefully it turns out to be good. So just to give the listeners a perspective in terms of the voting thing, I think there was about 12 people's votes came in, I think that number. No, not quite that many, maybe 10. Anyway, there was a lot of people voting. And in terms of the games that won by an absolute landslide, Blue Reflection won new IP by a ridiculous amount. I think there might have been one or two people in the entire team that didn't list it as the best new IP for the year. So congratulations to Koei Tecmo on that.
Was it?
Sorry?
Well, it wasn't really a great new IP year. It was great in everything else, but not a lot of new stuff.
What are you talking about? I mean, if you look at the new IPs, the four winners are all great games. So Blue Reflection, yeah, Hellblade, yeah. Neo, and Tokyo Tattoo Girls. It was actually a draw for third. I mean, generally speaking, the end of a console generation results in less new IP, but I think the stuff that was produced is good, and I think that Blue Reflection is certainly a game that deserves awards, and it didn't just pick up new IP, it also got best art direction, and it was the only game to actually beat Nier at a category that Nier was listed in, so... congratulations to the Koei guys on that. Probably didn't sell very well. Probably won't see another one, unfortunately, from the interviews that we've seen with Koei, but you never know. It'll be nice. The other one that won by a significant margin was, I'm just looking back at through my notes here, Yonder won Best Art House by a significant margin, which was good to see. Look, just about everybody who plays Yonder likes it, at least. People who don't like, you know, who are open to games that aren't about killing stuff like it anyway. On the other end of things, the Nintendo Switch category was actually the closest. Mario Odyssey and Zelda had a dead heat for four votes until my vote right at the end. I must admit, I was the tiebreaker. So Mario Odyssey won because of my vote. But that was very close between those two, and it was quite a significant gap between those two and the third place game, which was Fire Emblem Warriors, which was my personal favorite for the year. But, you know, sometimes I get outvoted on these things. the Vita was absolutely dominated by Nipponichi. It's obviously the last year that we'll probably have the Vita category. But Nipponichi published all three of the winners, Danganronpa, Yomiwari, and Rose in the Twilight. And the one that amused me the most was the VR category with Dead or Alive Extreme 3 winning. I didn't expect that when everybody sat down to vote. So thanks to the rest of the team for supporting that game, I guess.
That is right.
I was right there with you, don't worry.
I just did not expect that. But I guess it is reflective of really good tech, jokes aside, and obviously the nature of the content aside, what Koei actually pushed out of VR to get into Dead or Alive Extreme 3 was really impressive stuff. So it's still early for VR, and I think we're still in that stage where, you know, tech demos as such, and I use inverted commas in that, are still kind of the impressive side of VR. So, yeah, that's probably why that won. I think now that VR itself is selling great guns, I think it's now 2 million units for the PlayStation VR out there, we'll probably start to see more gamey stuff come out over the next year. I hope so anyway. And I imagine that next year, the VR category will be very gameplay focused.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. The other two winners of VR were Star Trek Bridge Crew, which I can't recommend enough. That is a Star Trek fan's dream experience, and it's really amazing. And Pinball FX VR 2, which was, you know, pinball and VR actually work really well together. It would have been nice to have more tables in that, because it's fairly limited compared to some of the other Zen Studios pinball games, but it's really good stuff. So anyway, be sure to check out the full list of award winners on the website. We will have a summary of it all by the time you're listening to this podcast up there. So be sure to have a look and let us know what you think. And of course, tell us what your favorite games of the year were as well. Look forward to hearing from you. We'll be back shortly, but we thought we'd throw in some music from Omega Quintet this week, because that game actually released on Steam just this week, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really great little game. Good JRPG. If you're looking for something to play over Christmas, it won't occupy too much of your time, and you'll have a lot of fun. So since it is the last podcast of the year, we thought we'd get reminiscing and look back at the year that was and I guess some of the highlights and all of that kind of stuff. So I might as well start. For me, the highlight of the year was definitely picking up my arcade cabinets or coffee table arcade machine. That's something I've wanted for an awful long time. I finally was in a position to actually buy one. And I really love it. I haven't stopped playing it yet. So it's obviously been a year where, in addition to playing all the amazing new games that have been coming out, I've been really catching up on a lot of retro stuff that I missed or never even knew existed until I started to play this thing. And I'm getting really good at Space Invaders too. That's kind of my default. I like to start the morning with a coffee and a couple of rounds of Space Invaders before I get to work. That's become my new habit. Life is good. on top of that, obviously, we've already spoken a lot about Nier. Nier was a big highlight of the year for me. I never even thought that game would happen because the first Nier was such a commercial flop. Persona 5 was a highlight and a disappointment, I guess. I've been waiting for it for so bloody long. So it was good to play it. But then it came out and it wasn't Persona 4. So that was disappointing, I guess, at one level. It was still good, but it didn't have Riso, so...
But it had Anne. How can you say
yeah,
that?
But,
Anne.
Yeah, it's got Anne, but it doesn't have Rousseau. So it has a poster of Rousseau. It's got like the most annoying tease of Rousseau ever. There's like one poster of her in the subway as a promotional thing, and yeah, it's a tease. What else has been in highlights? Oh, the Switch releasing, obviously. I'll be the first one to admit I wasn't sure Nintendo could actually pull it off with the Switch. Very short marketing cycle for it in the lead up to the launch, and you know, lots of issues with the company with the Wii U. So the fact that Nintendo managed to do so well with the Switch was really impressive, and I'm looking forward to a good, strong next year with it as well. It's less than a year old. And it's already become something I take with me everywhere. So that was a highlight, and I think those are probably the major highlights. It's a good year overall.
Yeah.
I mean, the website itself has been a highlight of the year as well. It's grown really well, thanks to all the great listeners out there. The podcast hit 60 episodes, I think, this year, which was really cool. Something we just started on a whim has grown into something that I really look forward to doing each week. And yeah, I've just started to do videos again on the site as well, and I'm having a good time with that. So yeah, the website's growing nicely and stuff as well. It's good to have an outlet there for, you know, voices for people who like alternative games, and I'm really proud to be able to represent that side of the industry. So yeah, that's me. What about you, Ginny? What are some of your highlights for the year?
I'm not gonna say Nier again because that's gonna be very redundant. But even though it did feel like a highlight of my year, I guess for me, the Switch was one, and I was a skeptic as well. Like Matt, like if you go back, a couple of episodes, or I don't know, maybe whenever we podcasted during the start of the year, this year I'm pretty sure I said that I wasn't sure if the Switch would have enough games on it and whether or not any games apart from the Nintendo flagship ones would come out on it, whether there'd be any third-party demand. And obviously, I've since had to completely eat my words. And I mean, I even bought the Switch later than everyone else because I wasn't convinced, even though Zelda came out and was a roaring success. I was like, oh, do I really want to pay all this money for this console and this one good game? And then, you know, I did. And then buying the Switch converted me completely. And also gave me the chance to experience Super Mario Odyssey. So I definitely say that the Switch is one of my highlights of the year. Or even just me just figuring out that I was an idiot and wrong all along. And that Nintendo was once again on top of the console game.
Well, it was kind of weird because Nintendo's never had done a good job in getting third-party games to sell. Even, you know, on the Wii, which was such a massive success, and on the DS and the 3DS, which are both big successes as well, the willingness of third parties to actually support those consoles, because their own games wouldn't sell very well on them. Nintendo games would sell great, but their own games wouldn't sell very well on them. It has been a common thread for them. But if you look at the charts on the Nintendo Switch, there's been a lot of stuff that sold really well that Nintendo didn't produce. I'm pretty sure Rocket League has been there on the top of the sales charts for yonks now. It might have been displaced for like 2 days by Mario Odyssey, but then it took the lead again. So it's been the number one seller on the Switch by third parties by a long way. Bethesda was rewarded for putting Doom and Skyrim on there. Minecraft obviously did very well. And then there's been a whole bunch of stuff that you just wouldn't expect to sell really well has done great, like Overcooked. Has been in the top 10 forever since it was released. Cat Quest has done really well as well, which is great to see. So there's been a real appetite for third-party stuff on the Switch, which has been a big part of its success, and that's going to be critical for it, you know, over the next couple of years as well. So good to see Nintendo turn that around as well. That was a nice surprise.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, having things like Stardew Valley basically on the top of the charts for who knows how long, that was actually really quite surprising to me. And Nintendo's basically decided that's going to unequivocally support the indies that want to put their game on the Switch. And that's been great, I think. segue into my other highlight, which I think is what I see as a resurgence of interest in terms of game development from places like China, Southeast Asia, and Australia in terms of gaining mainstream popularity. I mean, games like Rumu have had immense popularity, immense hype about them, small indie games from Australia, and other games come out from China that are basically AAA quality games that are finally getting some publicity, games like Cinna, games like, I think, the Lost Journey, The Last Journey, sorry. Just, I guess, seeing a renewed interest commercially from people in games from these regions that I suppose have been historically overlooked compared to, you know, everyone thinks America and Canada and whichever place is the biggest Ubi studio is like, you know, the quote-unquote hub of gaming and game development and game publication. But seeing people, I guess, having an interest in games from Asian countries, even small ones like Singapore, I mean, Cat Quest is a Singaporean game and it did amazingly. Just seeing a resurgence of these Asian developers and foreign developers on popular modern consoles has been really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really good to see that. I think that's in part because the Japanese market, being the kind of the gorilla in the room in the local Asian region, has done a good job of engaging with those markets and really encouraging them. As I see in Tokyo Game Show every year for the last couple of years, it's been very much about aligning the Asian market as something as an alternative to the Western market, and they've done a good job of that. So it's good to see. It's good for the overall creativity of the industry that there's different voices in there and different markets and different communities creating games. Mm-hmm. So Harvard, what about you? What are some of the highlights you've had from the year?
This year, I really liked the resurgence of local multiplayer. So we had this weird dark patch about maybe 3 or 4 years ago where all the traditional local multiplayer games were going online and then games were shipping without co-op and shipping without split screen and stuff like that. And so I love that the indies have really taken the helm and started making games that work with people on couches. So I've played a lot of Overcooked, that's been a lot of fun. Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time is a really good one as well. There's some Jackbox in there, a lot of the games on the Switch. 1-2 Switch is a great game if you do not pay for it. If someone else's house happens to have it, definitely try it out. There's some really interesting games which will make you reconsider what a party game is. The milking cow one comes to mind. But
Oh no. Yeah,
I think it's really cool that you can share this experience now, especially with the Switch. You can just slide off a controller and suddenly it's a two-player console. It's so great. And so it's good to get people into the hobby that you have, and it's also this is a great way to introduce people to games that they might not have tried before.
Yeah, absolutely. And my wife and I actually, when we were flying over to Japan this year, we set up the Switch on one of the little tray mats on the plane, and we made the trip that much more bearable by actually being able to play together the console on the plane, which was a nice thing. Unfortunately, the Switch's battery doesn't last for a trip between Sydney and Japan, but yeah, it was good while it lasted. And Sony's done a good job in terms of recognizing that there's value in the local multiplayer experience as well. It released PlayLink as a platform just recently, and that's obviously giving you party games like SingStar and the Triz Crivia one. Can't remember what it is. It's not Buzz, unfortunately. It should be Buzz, but it's not. But yeah, Sony's obviously got that platform there as well, which is good. And I agree that anything that promotes local multiplayer is a good thing, because that is the way I much prefer to play. Play my games multiplayer. I'm not a big fan of online nonsense. So yeah, that's a good sign for the industry. It's, again, it's the diversity of stuff. There's just so much being created that doesn't matter what your taste is, you'll find something now, which is good for everyone.
Yep, and just one more highlight. This is some blatant self-promotion here, but if you're ever around in Sydney and you have an interest in anime, Sydney Manga Anime Show had a really good year. I think Matt was there as well.
Smash, yes.
Yeah, Smash. And so I think we had one of the biggest turnouts in our history. And so it's really good seeing the community come together, see all these supportive things, like people getting together for group cosplays or group dance performances. It's really supportive, and it's really a good environment if you have an interest in that kind of thing, because a lot of the time you grow up maybe watching anime or reading manga, and it's just this hobby that you keep to yourself. And so being in a community where you can share what you like and really join that kind of friendship and bonding over something that you mutually love, I think that's something that's worth supporting. So if you've got an interest in that next year, Sydney, July, shameless self-plug.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think Smash was a really good one this year. Definitely my favorite show outside of Japan to go to. And it's got a lot of people come along, and it has a really good vibe. There's a lot of companies in Australia now to actually support this kind of Asian entertainment and culture, which means that shows like Smash can be bigger. They can obviously have more sponsors and more exhibitors, so they can do more. Generally speaking, I think the year was good for Asian entertainment in Australia. I think that the local market down here is getting much more accommodating of that stuff. We had a Vocaloid concert in Australia for the first time this year when IA came down to Melbourne and did the performance, which was cool. It's not Hatsune Miku, but we're getting there. But Hatsune Miku herself actually came down and did, the opera, the Hatsune Miku opera, was actually played in Australia for the first time in Adelaide, of all places, one of the smaller cities, as part of the Asian Arts, Asian Arts Festival that they have down there. So, and I, by all accounts, I didn't get a chance to go along to any of them, unfortunately, but by all accounts, the Japanese Film Festival was really well attended this year too, which was good to see. Because I think people should watch less of just Hollywood films and watch stuff produced outside of America, especially now that all of Hollywood's owned by Disney. And that's it. So variety's good. You get the variety from outside markets these days. So speaking of very Japanese stuff, we've got for you some music from Okami, which I have finally played for the first time for a review this week, and I can't believe it's actually taken me that long to play it, but yeah, it's an amazing game. It has amazing music. This is the battle theme from it, and enjoy. If you haven't actually played it before, please do yourself a favor and go out and play it. We'll be right back. for the last section of the podcast this week, it made sense to talk about Christmas recommendations from us to you, since it is the Christmas season and all that, and you're probably thinking about stuff to play. One of the things we did do before the podcast was search around for actual Christmas games, and there aren't many of them. For whatever reason, I don't think the developers see much value in doing Christmas games, unfortunately. I think you get like a week's worth of sales and that's it for the year, so probably not commercially viable. There are a couple. I mean, if you want to play Elf Bowl, it is out there. It's not good. It's really bad, actually, but it is out there, and it is Christmassy, I guess. But other than that, I mean, one thing that a lot of developers do is costumes and whatever for the year, for DLC or for limit runs on the mobile platforms and stuff. Fire Emblem Heroes has a Christmas theme going on. Santa costumes for various characters. Some of them are probably less Santa costume than, well, let's just say the things you don't want to actually see Santa wearing. But unfortunately, one of those is not Lynn, so I'm boycotting the promotion, and that's it.
Wow.
I'm not playing Fire Emblem Heroes again until Nintendo does the Lynn fan service that I really want. I'm putting my foot down on that. But yeah. There's also, I mean, it's always a good time of year to play, pull out Dead or Alive, I find, because there are the Christmas costumes for all the characters there, and they're pretty cool. And that's my Christmas game, like Die Hard is the Christmas film for a lot of people, I guess. Dead or Alive, it's a Christmas game. But yeah, I mean, it is that kind of time of year where you've got a little bit of time where you don't have work. Which is nice. Well, most of us do it anyway. But by the same token, there's all kinds of family parties and gift giving and all that nonsense going on. So you probably don't have as much time as you'd think to sit down and really get stuck into a game. So I'm going to recommend, if you are going to play a game over Christmas, either, you know, finish off one that's been sitting half done for a while, or pick up one of the shorter RPGs or something, because, yeah, for me, I'm going to recommend Blue Reflection again. That's actually quite a short RPG. You can kind of knock it over in 20 or 30 hours, which is well and truly doable, I would have hoped, for most people over Christmas. And, yeah, it's a good one. Just don't play Persona 5, because even though it does have Christmas costumes and looks pretty damn good, yeah, you don't have 100 hours.
You'll be here till Christmas 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Start it now and you might finish it by the end of Christmas year next year. But yeah, what would you recommend people play over Christmas, Ginny?
Well, Animal Crossing for one. Probably.
Oh, does it have a Christmas promotion going on?
Yeah. So in December, it's all like Christmassy themed, like snowing, and then they celebrate lots of the holidays and game and stuff as well. So Animal Crossing for sure.
Are you talking about the mobile app or the...
No, the Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Ah, right.
But I'm sure the mobile app is fine as well. The mobile app does currently have a Christmas event on. And I think if you log on any time this week, I believe, you get a Super Mario hat. So,
ooh, not Christmas. That's very Christmassy.
Well, it's red, so it's white, which is basically Christmas anyway. But Animal Crossing always has Christmassy stuff going on, so that would be a good one. Apart from Animal Crossing, this is a little bit more niche, because I actually did do my research, and I was like, I'm going to look up a game that's Christmassy. I found a game that's on the Game Boy Advance. I still have mine lying around, so if you still have your retro console lying around, this will be the game for you. Or if you have a PlayStation 3 or a regular Nintendo DS, you can play James Pond 2 RoboCod. So this is a platformer where you play as a robotic fish. And your arch enemy is now living in the North Pole and holding Santa's workers hostage. And you need to infiltrate Santa's grotto and free the penguins and reindeers that have been captured, retrieve the stolen toys for the children of the world, and defeat your rival once and for all.
Well, I guess that is a Christmas game.
Yeah. So
well done on finding that, because yeah, I'm sure everybody who likes Christmas games was reaching for Elf Bowl yet again. Yeah. Because that's the only one that seems to turn up with Google searches, and you found something else for them to play. So
I know.
Well done, you.
But I guess in all seriousness, please, if you haven't played Nier, please knock it out. You've got ample amount of time. It's not Persona 5. It won't take you 100 hours. But if not, there's also a ton of other smaller indie games that have come out recently that deserve your attention. So things like Ghost Story, you know, it won't take long at all for you to knock that one out. And I guess if you need a break from your stressful social commitments, Yonder's probably perfect. You know, you're just running around, minding your own business, chatting with animals, ignoring your screeching relatives in the background. It's perfect. I'd recommend those.
All these missed opportunities for Santa costumes, like Nier would be perfect for Santa costumes.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Or Yonder. I'd love to put a Christmas hat on a Groffle. Like,
yeah,
that would just be the cutest thing.
That would be...
Seriously missed opportunity. I'll have to send the developers an angry tweet about that, I think.
Why are there no Christmas costumes for the animals?
Yeah, exactly. You guys failed. I'm revising my score down to zero. Before we started recording, Harvard had the excellent suggestion that now that Die Hard is actually owned by Disney and everyone seems to think Die Hard is a Christmas movie, we may just get a Die Hard level in the next Kingdom Hearts, which would probably put another delay on the next Kingdom Hearts, but at this stage we're kind of expecting that. Because, yeah, that game's not coming out to 2042 anyway, so they might as well get started on the Die Hard level. That'd be cool. Donald Duck crawling around in the air vents with a gun going yippee-ki-yay in his Donald Duck voice. It is perfect. Like. And that would be, I guess, Christmassy according to most people's definition of what is a Christmas movie. But yeah, I mean, other than that, Harvard, what would you recommend people play, do, whatever, over Christmas?
Well, for my wholesome family fun recommendation, this is a year late, but Overcooked has some Christmas DLC.
Yeah.
And so it's a great idea to get into the spirit of frantically cooking for your real relatives by frantically cooking for some digital relatives. It totally fits. Get away from the stress of real life by engaging in the stress of digital life. And
yeah, I didn't realize that Overcooked is a perfect Christmas game because it might, well, I mean, now that it's got the Christmas theme as well, it's even better. But it's the kind of game that you just have to play with family and friends and stuff, and everybody can pick up a controller and have a great time with it too. It's one of those games that's just perfect for casual kind of multiplayer, which is good.
Yes, it's definitely better if you've got some people over, and especially if you've never played before, you really start to figure out what kind of people they are. Like, are they the ones who will do the job, or are they the ones who will bark at you to do the job? It's psychological. It's great. And
yeah.
for those who want a family unfriendly suggestion, because if type of person in this whole period of the year has got you feeling really cynical, my recommendation is going to be Dead Rising 4. So it's the new game of the Dead Rising series set around Christmas time with a bit of a nod to the Black Friday sales as well. It's a really harsh, scathing critique on, I guess, consumerism, if you want to read it that way. If you want to read it as a game where you pick up random objects to kill zombies, that is also a completely valid reading. So make fun of it what you will.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting recommendation, Harvard.
Yeah,
it's vaguely related to Christmas.
It is vaguely related to Christmas.
one that I
forgot to mention is if you have been playing Final Fantasy 14 at all, be sure to log in because there is the usual Christmas cheer going on over there. They don't call it Christmas, so I don't know what they call it. They call it something else to not offend anyone, I guess, who might not celebrate Christmas. But it is definitely Christmas. Christmas time in Eorzea, so yeah, log on, get your Christmas...
Your sexy Santa outfit.
Sexy panda outfit, yeah.
Santa.
Santa.
No. I thought you said panda.
I can't even imagine that. Like, what would a sexy panda outfit look like?
Just like a regular panda, but like with a bikini on?
Oh, that would be pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, Square Enix always does a really good job with Final Fantasy 14 and pulling out all the stops to make a fun event that you want to play. It's probably a little bit time-consuming for a lot of people for Christmas, but I guess there are lonely people out there, and Final Fantasy 14 will certainly make you feel in the spirit, even if you haven't got people around to celebrate otherwise Christmas with. But yeah, I think that's that's pretty much a wrap. It's been a really good year, and I'd like to thank everybody for listening. The podcast has kind of grown nicely over the year. We're on iTunes and stuff now, so we keep finding new people, new listeners. I keep getting tweets from people I've never heard from before about the podcast, which is nice to know that there are people out there listening. So I'd like to thank you all for your patience with some of our nonsense, and yeah, I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you have a really great Christmas. I hope you have a really great New Year's, and we will be back for sure, and we will be better than ever. We get better every week, I think, and that's going to continue, because we are definitely having a good time with this, and we're hoping you're having a good time listening. So to finish the podcast for the year, I have capitulated to Ginny's demands to put a Sonic song in.
Yes.
Because, yeah, every week when we're discussing the podcast, it's like, can we have Sonic music? Can we have Sonic music? And I'm like, no, Sonic's pretty terrible. I can't stand it. And, yeah, it just keeps happening. So to finish the podcast this year, the worst song we've played on the podcast all year. And now I'm going to get lots of tweets from very angry Sonic fans, but I don't care. It's Christmas. I can say what I want. It is Sonic's Green Hill Zone theme. Thanks very much for listening, and see you at the other end of Christmas.
Yeah, happy Christmas.